भगवन्त इतम् यद्वासुदेवे किल लोकनाथे कुर्वन्ति सर्वात्मकमात्मभावं न यत्र भूया परिवार्थ उग्रा. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes and guarantee 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. We are reading this evening from the first canto, third chapter, text number 40. Of Srimad Bhagavatam. I was asked to speak tonight on the purpose of life. This particular sloka is very appropriate. We find here a most wonderful, significant historical scene. It is taking place at the holy land of Naimisharanya. Naimisharanya is considered by many to be the very center of this universe. There are 14 planetary systems. 7 higher planetary systems, 7 lower planetary systems. And this Earth planet is considered exactly in the middle. And Naimisharanya is considered the center of the Earth. Great sages who were headed by Shonaka Rishi assembled in this land for the purpose of performing a sacrifice which would counteract the terrible influences of this Kali Yuga and bring about enlightenment, purification, and hope in this dreadful age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Because these great devotees of the Lord, through scriptural understanding, as well as through very clear vision, they could perceive the coming events of this age of Kali. And of course, everything that has been predicted in the scriptures is unfolding right before our own eyes. If we read the newspapers, or even just look around at our situation in today's society, we find the lowest possible degradations of human consciousness. First of all, we find by the millions, slaughter of innocent animals. Of course, this has been going on for some time. People consider, even in the name of religion, that only the human being has a soul, and that the lower species, they have no soul. Therefore, it's perfectly sanctioned and proper to torture, murder, and kill any other type of life. But you know, since time immemorial, human beings have tried to philosophically justify their own nefarious activities. Just as today people say the animals have no soul, so we can kill them. In the United States of America, which is considered a very advanced country, just 130 years ago, slavery was legal in the United States. People were taking human beings from Africa. It was a business. They were promising them all kinds of wonderful riches, wealth, and everything else. You just get on this boat, we'll pay your way. Then they came to America, they were put in chains, and they were sold as slaves. And the person who owned that slave, if he wanted, he could torture them. If he wanted, he could kill them. He could do anything, because they were his property. And yet they were practicing religion, and they were going to church. But the philosophy was, animals don't have souls, so you can eat animals. But black people do not have souls either. So you can treat them like animals. You can whip them, you can beat them, you can kill them, you can sell them, do anything, because they have no souls. And do you know when 150 years ago in America, it was considered the common understanding that women had no souls, that women were not given rights, because although they were human beings, they had no souls. So in this way, for the purpose of exploitation, even in the name of God, in this age of Kali Yuga, people create and concoct all sorts of philosophical justifications. But as one great playwright says, that you kill the animals and cause their bloodshed, and as a reaction, soon you will be killing your own children. Because fact is, in animal civilization, jivasya jiva jivanam, jiva jivasya jivanam, jiva jivasya jivanam, that one living being is food for another. But human civilization is meant for another principle. All life under human beings is meant to be treated like the children of human society. And because man has degraded and debased to such immorality, justified by philosophy, to kill innocent animals, the prophecy has come true. Through this bloodthirsty, callous state of consciousness, now throughout the world, mothers and fathers are killing their own children in the womb. And it's legal. Animal slaughter is legal. Now killing your own children is legal. And they justify it philosophically, that until it reaches 7 months, there's no soul. What is the nature of the soul? The Bhagavad Gita explains that wherever there is life, it means the presence of the soul is there. As soon as life begins, from the very seed of conception of any species of life, there is a soul. Even within the seed of a flower, there is a soul. Within every blade of grass, within every tree, within every fish, every bird, every insect, every animal, and every human being, wherever we see consciousness, wherever we see growth, that is the evidence of the Jivatma, which is part of God, which is meant to be respected as a part of God. But today, in the Western countries, 99.9% of cows are slaughtered. The only cows in America that are not slaughtered are the ones at New Brindavan. Even the dairy farms, as soon as their milk production goes, to the slaughterhouse. Except for the Krishna devotees that are protecting cows, every cow in the entire nation will be slaughtered, today or tomorrow. And what is the reaction from such cold-hearted murder? That today, 1 out of 3 of every children that are in the womb of their mother is slaughtered. This is legal. This is the federal legal abortions. 1/3 of all infants, children, are slaughtered by their own mothers. But if you consider how many illegal abortion clinics are going on for less prices, the percentage will raise a lot. And recently we have heard that places like London, 10-year-old children, killing 2-year-old children, murdering them, just for fun, just for excitement. Mothers killing children, lovers killing lovers, children killing mothers and fathers, beating them, screaming at them. Fathers killing their own sons. This is going on, and these type of incidences are becoming more and more and more frequent. Meanwhile, illicit sex, intoxication, is growing rampantly. Recently, I went to an AIDS conference in Bombay by the auspicious request of one of our devotees. And what was the slogan? That if you want to stop AIDS, you must propagate wearing condoms. Is that what you call it? Spreading, wearing condoms throughout the nation. They want it to be a condom nation. Condemnation brings condemnation. They don't consider that illicit sex is sinful. It is against the laws of God. And when illicit sex is rampant, there will be rampant, terrible karmic consequences. But they want to philosophically justify everything. And they want to create some technological invention by which they can avoid the sinful reactions for their sinful activities. But it is impossible. Even if they try to outsmart God and outsmart the laws of karma by high-quality condoms, there will be some other disease that will somehow or other get through. And right now, according to medical scientists in some countries, within the next 50 years, 1/3, sometimes half the population of some nations are going to be dying of AIDS. And practically all of it is due to illicit sex. but they're not willing to hear from God or hear from the scriptures how to live a pure life, how to live a moral life. Therefore, look at what's happening in our society. Drug addicts, suicides, illicit sex rampant, terrible, incurable diseases, murders, violence, terrorism. And as a result of this, material nature itself is echoing the conditions of human consciousness through volcanoes, tidal waves, floods, droughts, hurricanes, earthquakes. And yet, people are in such illusion and delusion that they just turn on their television sets and watch some soap opera drama and forget the reality around them. Forget their own insecurities. I was told this evening that in one of the European countries they interviewed one woman, an intelligent woman. She said it used to be that a mother was afraid for her children. She said, but the day is coming now that a mother is afraid of her children. Kali Yuga is progressing. And the sages of Naimasharanya, just at the beginning of this age, they wanted to sacrifice the best years of their life to do something or other to try to counteract the effects of this age of Kali, this demoralization of human society and degradation of consciousness. So they performed a sacrifice. And at that time, as the yajna was going on, one great devotee of the name Suta Goswami appeared in their presence. They recognized that Suta Goswami was a bona fide spiritual master in an authorized disciplic succession of great saints. Suta Goswami was present at the time when Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. And the sages of Naimasharanya, knowing that he was pious in every respect, he was completely surrendered for the welfare of others, he had very submissively and with all humility heard from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami and had very carefully dedicated his life to following those teachings. They recognized that he was a person whose words could liberate the entire universe. So they humbly inquired from Srila Suta Goswami. They asked about the goal of life, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. They asked how the effects of sin and suffering could be counteracted in this age of Kali Yuga. And ultimately they asked what the most important subject matter was to be heard for all humanity. They wanted to know about Krishna, about how he incarnates in this world in so many various forms. They wanted to know about the great Paramhamsa pure devotees who have surrendered their lives at the lotus feet of the Lord. After Suta Goswami heard the questions of Sonaka Rishi and the sages of Naimasharanya, he is replying in this verse. that to make such relevant inquiries is the most important purpose of our life. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successfully and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love unto the personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes, and guarantee 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. The beginning of spiritual life is to open our ears, open our minds, open our hearts to hear the transcendental narration of the Supreme Lord and his teachings. We find in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna became liberated by hearing from Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj became liberated by hearing from Shukadev Goswami. This is the universal principle of Sanatana Dharma, that the beginning is to hear Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Without hearing from the proper persons with the proper state of consciousness, there is no question of religion. Prahlad Maharaj has said there are 9 processes of devotional service. But without hearing submissively from the right source, there is absolutely no chance of performing any of the other 8 processes of devotional service. And human life is meant, according to the Brahma Sutra, for this purpose. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you have obtained the rare and valuable opportunity of the human form of life, inquire submissively into the Absolute Truth. Everyone in this world is asking questions. When the sun rises in the morning, we hear the birds, they are chirping, making so many beautiful songs. They are sweet for us to hear. But if someone could translate these songs, you would hear, "Where is my food? Where is my mate? Where is my shelter? How can I defend myself? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending." Their consciousness is constantly trying to solve these problems. They are constantly asking these questions. Where will I eat? How will I survive? How will I protect my offspring? And human beings, when they rise in the morning, they pick up the newspapers, they're inquiring, what's happening in the world? And the first thing in the morning, this is what they fill their consciousness with. How much good news is in the newspaper? It's practically all bad news. They put comic strips in just to try to create some balance, because everyone knows that the comic strips are completely fairy tale. They're all made up. They're totally fictional, and there's no question of truth in comic strips. They're just made up by some man's brain. And that's generally the only part of the newspaper where there's anything positive. All the facts and figures of what's going on in the world is terrorism and death and dirty politics. and droughts and assassinations, and you all know better than me what's in the newspapers. What does it have to do with the goal of life? It's simply filling your brains with the contaminations and the illusions of this world. And the average human being, this is what he begins his day with. Everyone knows that when you wake up in the morning, your mind is basically neither here nor there. And what you fix it on first thing in the day is what will influence you throughout the entire day. That is why, according to all the previous acharyas, it is most highly recommended that during the most auspicious time of the Brahma Muhurta hour, when you first rise, before the sun even rises, you should immediately fix your mind totally, without any distraction, in the thoughts of God. We should be reading the scriptures. We should be chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is human civilization. You rise in the morning, you take bath, you go into a temple, or a temple in your own home. You begin by chanting japa, meditating on the name of God. Then you have the Mangal Arati, offering praise and worship and devotion to the Lord. Then you read scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and fill your consciousness with the Word of God, the brilliant, beautiful narrations of the Lord and His pure devotees. And that's how we start our day. The first several hours should be completely immersed in God consciousness. Everything else waits. There's no question of phone calls at that time of the morning. There's no question of anything except Krishna. And when we saturate our consciousness fully with Krishna, then we go out and perform our duties. And our consciousness is in the proper spirit to perform our work for a noble purpose in devotion to God. But how many people begin their day like this? Most people, they wake up in the morning and the first thing they do is maybe they turn on the radio and they just hear all kinds of crazy music and they hear all kinds of bad news. And then they sit and they drink some coffee or tea, which is an intoxication which pollutes the consciousness. And they read the newspaper. And they just fill their consciousness with all of the manifestations of Kali Yuga. And then, saturated with this state of mind, they go in to start their day and go to work. You think they're is anybody enlivened by reading the newspapers? Only the worst demons. They're enlivened by hearing about all these disasters. But in this way, everyone is beginning their day by making so many inquiries. And then throughout the day, the lawyers in the courtrooms, they are making so many inquiries how to win their case. And the businessmen are making so many inquiries how to make more money. And the politicians are making so many inquiries how to get more votes. But according to Sutta Goswami, only making inquiries in regard to the absolute truth can make one's life successful. This is the beginning of human existence. This is the purpose of life. Why am I suffering? Why is there suffering all around me? Why is there death? What is the purpose of life? Who am I? Who is God? What is my relationship with God? When you make these inquiries, the goal of your life to answer, then you are a human being, according to Shastra. Until then, Bhagavatam says, you are two-legged animal. Beasts on earth. The other day, one of our devotees, he was just initiated on Nrisingha Chaturdasi. He was given the name Yashodanandana Das. He lives in one of the very, very, very rural parts of Maharashtra. And Bhagavan Prabhu was telling me, he lives about 2 hours from where they have their worship. And to get from where he lives to the worship, he has to go through jungles, where there are many, many tigers and wild animals. And to get there for Mangal Arati, which begins at 5 in the morning, he has to begin at 3, where it's pitch dark. And as you know, tigers are nocturnal animals. They hunt for their prey at night. During the day, they're usually sleepy, but at night, they're awake, alive, looking for food. So practically every day, when he's walking through the jungles or riding his bicycle through the jungles, he's seeing tigers. One time, he explained, he was going down the path and he had to slam onto the brakes of his bicycle because he just ran into a tiger. Huh? Did he tell you like this? Huh? Yeah, he sees them killing other animals. He sees them looking at him. And he's going for Mangal Arati. He understands that my human life is wasted if I do not attend Mangal Arati. He's willing to go through such risks, 2 hours of walking through dark jungles alone, infested with snakes, cobras, tigers, just to go to Mangal Arati. He knows the importance. And how lazy we are. We're thinking, oh, it's too difficult to go to Mangal Arati. Even if we have a temple in our own home, we think, oh, it's just too much trouble to have Mangal Arati. Too much trouble to chant my rounds. What type of craziness? What type of laziness? Crazy, lazy human society. So many justifications, so many excuses. Any fool can make an excuse to not do what's good. An intelligent person makes an excuse to do what's good. Excuses, excuses, excuses. Every parent knows when a child, whatever a child's not supposed to do that he does, he always has so many excuses why he did it. And whatever a child's supposed to do that he doesn't do, he has so many excuses. And the parents never listen to these useless excuses. They know you're just lazy. But the parents are making more excuses than the children. They know that spiritual life is the goal. But so many excuses. Oh, I have my business. I have my work. I have my family. I have my maintenance. I have my studies. Lame, useless excuses. You have time to eat. You have time to sleep. You have time to socialize. If you don't have time for God, you are the most unfortunate soul in all of existence. Better to be an animal and live according to your nature than to be given the most precious gift of human life where you can cultivate God consciousness and misuse it and make so many excuses. There is no possible excuse under the sun to not make Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, the center of your life. And if you think you have an excuse, you are cheating yourself. You are lying to yourself. There's no excuse. But anyways, I was saying to this Yashodhanandan Prabhu that you're going through these jungles, through so many tiger and snakes and everything to Mangalarti. I say, you think it's dangerous there? You come and live in Bombay for some time. These two-legged animals are far more dangerous than the four-legged animals in the jungles. Because tigers are not dishonest. They're actually nice people. They're just, they have to eat. And if you happen to be there when they're hungry, they're perfectly justified to eat you. That's their dharma. They're not bad. And if they're not hungry, they won't touch you. And if you don't scare them unnecessarily, they'll just let you go by. But here in this asphalt jungle, there's so many two-legged animals who are trying to exploit you. They may rape you. They may cheat you. They may kill you. They may burn your house down. What's going on? In fact, it is said in the Shastra that there's only two species of life in all creation that are so envious that they will harm another living being for no good reason at all. When the mosquito bites you, he has to drink your blood to survive. He's not conscious that he's hurting you. He's just surviving. All the animals and all the insects and all the birds and all these creatures, they're not envious. They'll only cause violence if it is for their survival, and they don't know any better. There's only two species in all existence who simply out of envy, for no good reason, will cause harm to another. One is a snake, and the other is an envious human being. A snake will bite you for no reason other than envy. And a human being, for no good reason at all, they bite you with their sharp words. They'll insult you. They'll discredit you. They'll cheat you. They'll cause violence to you. But the Shastras say, of the two, the snakes aren't so bad. Because a snake, if you give him proper herbs, you have seen snake charmers. They can charm the snake into being very nice. But an envious human being, nothing can charm them. When a human being puts his mind to go against God, nobody could pacify that person's wrath, greed, lust, envy, and pride. I was recently, we took some of our Gurukul children in America to a zoo. It was a big zoo in America because they wanted to see what different animals look like. And there was an exhibition at the end. There was all dangerous animals, lions, tigers, and all kinds of snakes and everything, the dangerous animal division. And then there was a big sign, and it said, in this cage is the most dangerous animal on earth. This animal has killed more life ruthlessly than any other animal on earth. Beware, don't come too close. And you go up, and there's bars, and behind the bars, there's a mirror. I went like this. And the animal behind the bars went like this back to me. It is true. Therefore, this human form of life, it is meant for transcending these lower qualities and releasing from the very core of our hearts the divine nature of God consciousness that is within us. And this begins by approaching wise men or women who have heard the truth from genuine authorities and who are living by that truth. By hearing from such people, by inquiring from such people, and by applying their instructions to our life, we can become successful. We can find real peace, real prosperity, and real purpose fulfillment in our life. Therefore, the first and most important consideration in human life is sadhu satsang, association with sadhus and hearing from them. But when we speak about sadhus, we do not mean simply a type of dress or someone who takes up the occupation of begging. A sadhu is one who is the humble servant of his spiritual master and was simply delivering the message of his spiritual master to others through his words and through his lifestyle. We must preach by our example, and we must preach by our words. And such a person who is doing like that, we must hear from them. And then we must apply that knowledge to our life. Today in India, and not only in India, all over the world, there are preachers. Sometimes they attract tens or hundreds and thousands of people to hear them speak. There are Christian evangelists. They fill up stadiums with hundreds and thousands of people who come to hear them speak. They bring their girlfriends, and when they leave, they go to a restaurant, and they eat all crazy things, and they drink alcohol. What have they heard? And here in India, sometimes we find so many hundreds and thousands of people coming to hear the Bhagavat or the Ramayana or the Mahabharata, even on television. It was a very noble endeavor to put the Ramayana and the Mahabharata on television. Millions upon millions of people were watching it every day. But how much did it change the consciousness of the country? People go to hear as a form of entertainment, as a form of piety. But spiritual life is beyond just being pious. Spiritual life is not simply to come to hear the glories of the Lord, is not just a pious form of entertainment. The sages of Naimasharanya, when they were listening to Sutta Goswami, their purpose was to transform their entire consciousness. When Maharaj Parikshit was listening to Shukadeva Goswami, he was not just thinking, well, I'll have a nice pious form of entertainment for the last 7 days of my life and I'll enjoy hearing this nice sadhu speaking and singing nicely. he has a nice voice, and he's very learned, so it will be very enjoyable to hear from him. Maharaj Parikshit went to Shukadev Goswami with the idea that every syllable, every word that you speak, it means my life or my death. Whatever Shukadev Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit was ready and willing to surrender his life to doing. This is what we mean by hearing submissively. We hear with a desire, with our aspiration to change the quality of our life, to spiritualize our existence entirely. This is the purpose of human life. And it is joyful. Rajya Vidya Rajya Guyam Pavitram Itam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dham Shushukam Karatam Avyayam. Krishna says that this knowledge is the king of education. It is the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge. It is the most joyful knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self through realization. Rajya Vidya Rajya Guyam Pavitram Itam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dham Shushukam Karatam Avyayam. Krishna says that this knowledge is the king of education. It is the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge. It is the most joyful knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self through realization. Our intention is not to entertain you. Our intention is simply on behalf of our spiritual master, as his messenger, to give you the pure words of enlightenment, the eternal words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And our hope and our prayer is that these words, which are not my words, they are Krishna's words, which have been made sweeter and sweeter and sweeter since the beginning of time through the previous acharyas, the great saints. These words are like nectar. These words, when received submissively, grant the blessing of immortality and ecstasy. And to taste that ecstasy is the goal of our life. It is the purpose of our life. So what is the purpose of life? To hear the message of Sanatana Dharma regularly in the association of sincere, spiritually minded people, and to put those words into our life. And what is the first, most important instruction that pervades all the great scriptures and all the words of the great acharyas? That in the association of devotees, we must learn how to take shelter of chanting the holy name of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. We know the story of Valmiki Muni. He was one of these two-legged animals. He was a dacoit of the lowest breed. Correct, Swamiji? He was a murderer. He was a highway robber. He was a hunter. He was a thief. When he met Narada Muni, Narada Muni revealed to him the karma consequences of his terrible sins. And Valmiki Muni said, "Well, what should I do to counteract it?" He said, "There's only one way. And that's to chant the name of God. There's no other way, no other way, no other way. If you sincerely chant the name of the Lord, that name has the power to neutralize all the sins you've ever committed in all your previous births. And it has the power to deliver pure love, prema bhakti." This man was so sinful, he could not even chant the name of Ram. We may think ourselves unqualified or unfit for spiritual life, but can you say the name of Ram? Everyone say, Ram.
Rama.
Louder. Ram.
Ram.
Rama.
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 How many of you cannot say the name of Rama? How many of you can say the name of Rama? Go like this. Harivo.
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 You are saying the name of Hari. That means you're thousands of times, millions of times more pious than Valmiki Muni. He couldn't say it. He tried. He was such a sinful person, the name of Rama could not come out of his mouth. So Narada Muni said, you are a devotee, not of God, but of death, because you are so fond of killing. The name of the Lord of death is Mara. So you chant his name. Valmiki Muni said, that I can do. And he began to chant the name of Mara. Everyone, let us chant the name of Mara very loudly. Mara, 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 Ram, 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 Rio! You have all become devotees. Somehow or other, by constantly repeating the name of Mara, Marama, Rama, Ram, he was chanting the name of Ram. And he became purified simply by hearing from Narada Muni submissively and following his instruction. And what was his instruction? To chant the name of God. He became the greatest saint. He became the author of Ramayana. To this day, we are all hearing his words. So this is the process of self-realization. To associate with saintly people like Narada Muni or his representatives, to hear from them and to learn from them how to chant the name of God. That is the purpose of human life. To spiritualize our consciousness by this process, and then through our occupation, through our work, through our family and social responsibilities in this world, we manifest this great wealth of devotion to God for the benefit of all living beings. That is the purpose of human life. Why should we waste another moment with our crazy, lazy excuses? We do not know whether tomorrow will even come in this life. Every time we drive down the highways, practically, we see people, just trucks and cars and buses, just all mangled and deformed from terrible accidents. And believe me, I would not think that a single one of those people were thinking that I will die today. And yet, we are making our lazy, crazy excuses why there's something more important than hearing from the sadhus and chanting the names of God. Today is the day. And if you're already doing it, every time you hear this message, you should do it with more intensity, more urgency, more desperation. Every time we hear the message of Krishna, even if we're devotees, we should approach that pravachan with the desire that I'm longing to hear something that will increase the intensity of my devotion. We shouldn't simply come thinking, I've heard this so many times before and I'm supposed to come again. Not like that. Even if you hear the same lecture You sing the same song for the rest of your life. If that message is the word of God, every time you hear it, you will get newer, fresher inspirations to surrender to God. But if you're insincere, you'll be bored. You'll think, I've already heard this. Unless you're a pure devotee without any material desires, in ecstatic love of God, you haven't ever really heard it. We're listening, and little by little we're starting to hear. Thank you very much, Eric.